from the WEEI studios. 93.7 WEEI FM and HD1, Lawrence, Boston, and Odyssey Sports Station. We're back to KJ and Lions on WEEI.
Adrian Wojnarowski reporting that the Celtics majority ownership group led by Wick Grousebeck is planning to put their stake up for sale. Jay, you got any money to spare? No, this comes following the franchise's 18th championship. The investment group purchased the team in 2002 for $360 million. Have that?
Oh, I'm pretty sure I don't have enough.
And the Suns, just by the way, were sold last year for $4 billion. So a lot of money there.
Let me check my backpack. Hold on a second.
Okay. I'll give you
second hour of KJ and Lions here on WEEI, 617-779-7937. Text line 37937. All right, still to come, we'll hear from Noah Dalzell at SB Nation. She'll talk further, but you just heard the report and what everybody's talking about, really. And in further than New England, because John and I was on what used to be called CBS Sports Radio, it's now the Infinity Network. Last night, the first thing I was asked was like, really, the Celtics are for sale? Like, what's going on? And I think what could be going on is just the cost of sports have just skyrocketed, right? If you paid $300 million for something less than about 20 years ago, and now it's kind of worth maybe $4.5 billion, maybe someone will give you $5 billion for it. Why wouldn't you sell? That is kind of the business of sport.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great time to make a profit. And also, if the way the CBA is structured, I really hate it because I think it penalizes teams for drafting and developing well, and it's going to start penalizing the Celtics really in a couple of years from now because Jaylen Brown's Supermax kicks in this fall. Tatum's will kick in next fall. So that next spring, that 2026 spring, the tax bill combined with the roster cost is going to be about $450 to $470 million. So if you think about it too, KJ, that is just for the players on the roster to show up. That's the cost. Then you have Joe Mazzulla's salary, Brad Stevens' salary, the scouting salaries, the travel costs, the assistant coach salaries. Just to have a basketball team play a game, I mean, we might be talking over $500 million per season for this ownership group, maybe $5, $10, $515 million for a team that doesn't own their own arena either. Like, that is a huge cost, and I think it's really, again, I think the CBA is completely unfair in this regard. And it's not just the Celtics. It's already hurt the Warriors. I think it's going to hurt a small market team like OKC a lot more than the NBA thought it will. It's going to hurt a team potentially like Indiana, a team like Orlando as well. So I think that's a big part of this, is this bill going forward is going to get so massive, you're either going to have to pay that massive cost or you're going to have to maybe let a guy like Porzingis go or let a guy like Holiday go, which is going to impact your chances for winning.
And maybe you don't want to be the bad guy that has to make that move. I think that move eventually has to be made. But I also think these owners, especially in the NBA, are trying to figure out, okay, how do we maximize the valuations of these teams when you're seeing that teams are just through the roof when it comes to football? Like, let's just listen to the rankings of the NBA and where they rank amongst all sports franchises, baseball, football, basketball, racing, and soccer internationally. The Golden State Warriors are the most valuable NBA team at $7 billion. They're number three overall. Then the Knicks at nine. They're at $6.1 billion. This is based on Forbes when they took the survey September of last year, so another one should come towards the beginning of the fall of this year. Then you've got the Lakers at 15th at $5.9 billion. The Bulls at 39th at $4.1 billion. And then the Celtics at 43 at $4 billion, call it 4.1. That's one of the last numbers we heard. And then the Clippers at 45. So if I'm Wick and these guys, I'm saying, wait, there's supposed to be all this money rolling in from the relationship with China. Yeah. They have what they call
the broadcast contracts, what, $76 billion over 10 years or
right,
whatever it is? Yeah.
Right. So I got to start thinking about how do we cash in, because the Warriors at $7 billion, you would say, okay, that's new money. The Knicks are old money. The Lakers are old money. The Bulls are old money. The Celtics are old money. And the Clippers are new money. So at some point, you don't want to start falling out of those ranks, because the Clippers' number is going to go up because they now have a new arena that they're about to step into. So their valuation is going to go up probably past where the Celtics are. And then you'd have to say, is the history of the Golden State Warriors and even the Knicks bigger than the Boston Celtics? So at some point, when do you cash in? And again, I would almost have to ask Adam Silver, What about these 300 million people that are watching games nightly in China? Are we at least charging them a dollar? You know, because where's the return that you're supposed to get? Because the NBA is the only league outside of international football that is cut through on an international level and has seen a sustained return. Even the NFL still trying to figure it out. Baseball really hasn't been able to do it.
Yeah, there's somebody in the Twitch chat, SonicBlue81, says, what are these $5 billion teams going to sell for 20 years from now, right? So Matt Ishbia
just
probably
can't sell them.
Right, like Matt Ishbia paid, what, $4 billion for the Suns? In 10 years, he might try to get 10, right? So it's crazy, the valuations. I agree, but if you're Wick, and here's, like, Wick is a rich guy, okay? He's a billionaire. He's a really rich guy.
He's wealthy. Let's just call it what it is.
There's a difference, though.
Shaq is rich. He's wealthy.
There's a difference between being really wealthy and being able to pay $500 million a year just for the basketball operation to show up every night, right?
Right.
Like, there is a difference there. And that's why I wonder, like, there was a report yesterday from Adam Himmelsbach that Steve Pagliuca might be part of a group that ends up buying out Wick's majority share. And I know we talked about this yesterday, KG, but I keep going back to it. There's two reasons why I think Wick already has a pretty good idea of who the buyer is going to be. Number one, the way they structured the announcement, like we're going to sell part of it by 2025, the rest by 2028, and Wick's going to remain governor till 2028. Because if they didn't know who the owner is, Joe Schmo, new owner, could come in and say, well, screw you. No, I'm taking the whole team over in 2025, right? So for them to announce that.
But their relationship is better than that.
But then also,
they're better run than that, too.
So, but then also, for them to be signing all these big contracts in the last 6 weeks, right? Jrue Holiday extension, Derek White extension, Jason Tatum Supermax extension. They have an idea that whoever's going to come in is going to be willing to pay for most, if not all of that, those extensions and the luxury tax, which is why you put those two things together. It could be PAGS, or if it's not PAGS, it's at least, I think, somebody who they have a pretty good idea of who the next owner is going to be.
Well, hopefully it's not Bankman-Fried. What was the guy's name in Harvard with the bushy
Sam
hair?
Bankman-Fried.
Sam Bankman-Fried.
Yeah. I don't want that guy on the court.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's the other part of it is, where does this money exist outside of a hedge fund? Let's just say that it's not going to be an internal sale, that Wick does find an external buyer. It's probably got to be some type of huge hedge fund. And I'll just say what it is. It's probably a better investment to invest in an international big-time soccer team at the level of
PAGS
the Celtics.
PAGS tried to do that, right? Like a year or two ago, he tried to buy.
But it depends on who the team is.
Man City, I think I could be wrong, but I think it was Man City.
Manchester United been for sale, yeah. But there's a bucking system based with those fans. And I think the similar thing would be here too, like, because we discussed yesterday, if you missed any of the show, the Odyssey app is free. Just type in WEEI and go to yesterday's show where we talked about, hey, maybe the play is getting your own arena and kind of putting it on the backside of Encore Hotel and resorts, and then set up, you know, look, all those stores would be gone. You can always put another pharmacy somewhere in Medford, right? But do you take that area of land and turn it into the new Celtics arena because of some of the things that they've got to consistently negotiate with the Bruins?
Yeah, and yesterday we talked about how, like, the TD Garden itself, the naming rights for the TD Garden, based off all the research I could find, the Bruins get all that money. Yet the Celtics are in there 41 nights a year winning a championship, right? The Celtics have won 18 championships. The Bruins have won, what, one in the last 50 years? So, but the Bruins are getting all that revenue. And if I'm the Celtics, And look, I'm a Bruins fan. This is not to poo-poo the Bruins.
Right, it's not them versus us.
But if I'm the Celtics, I'm sitting there looking like, well, we're a better-run organization. We bring in a ton of money.
That'd be pushing the line, Rick, because now you're talking about, like, how I run my organization. You can tell me how I run
No, but if I'm the Celtics, I'm sitting there saying, feeling all those things and be like, I'm still paying rent to these guys. I don't even have joint ownership on the building. And I'm the one that just had 1 million people come in for a parade and help, you know, patronize all those bars and everything and all those restaurants around the TD Garden. Like, the Celtics, if I'm them, I'm looking at this saying, this is a bad deal. And credit to the Bruins for negotiating a good one. But for the Celtics, that arena deal, from everything I can find, and it's not a terrible deal, but it's not a good one for the Celtics either. And if I'm a new Celtics owner, I'm coming in saying, either I'm renegotiating with the Bruins for some sort of better deal or joint ownership of the Garden, or I'm picking up and I'm building my own place and having my own concerts and having my own home games and my own, you know, the circus coming to town in July in my own building.
You schlep over to the casino right after if you want to, or before.
Night Shift Brewing in Everett. Good spot, by the way.
There you go. I mean, you can't get rid of that brand new McDonald's they just put there on Broadway.
The Teddy Peanut Butter Factory in Everett. Right. You got to go there, of course.
Well, yeah. So that's the other part of it is, like, if you're the Lakers, right, is anybody bucking you? Are the LA Kings getting in the way of what you're trying to do in crypto? No, in fact, the Lakers are like, not only is it pretty much our place, but we share it with the other NBA team, and now they're leaving, and you would probably say the Clippers probably have more accelerating value right now than the Lakers do, right? I mean, with the Clippers are at $3.9 million, and the Lakers are $2 billion more. I'm not saying they're going to catch them, but just getting your own arena, you might be able to. Oh, you might be able to add $800 million to your value just because you own the arena. And I think the I think the Celtics are in that similar situation. Look, I didn't realize we're up against the break. 617-779-7937. Text line 37937. John, tell them who we got next.
We have Noah Dalzell coming up next, but first we have to trend.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now on WEEI, the Red Sox won 6-5 in 12 innings yesterday. Nick Pivetta had 7 innings pitched with 0 runs. Jarren Duran, a big defensive play late in this game. Red Sox, 2 runs in the 12th inning to end up winning 6-5. They take on the Yankees in New York tonight. Joe Weil will be on the pregame. Hall of Famer Joe Castiglione will be on the call here on the WEEI, Shaw's and Star Market, Red Sox Radio Network. And trending is brought to you by the 99 Restaurants. Lobster Lovers Weekend is back. Visit the 99 Restaurants this Friday through Sunday and order their famous Colossal or Hot Butter. Excuse me. Wow, I pronounced that wrong. And I've actually eaten the Hot Buttered Lobster Roll before. It's fantastic. I might want to get one this weekend now. And you'll get a free 3-course meal upgrade. So you order one of those lobster rolls, folks, you'll get a free 3-course meal upgrade. This weekend only, you got to love the nines. I'm John Lyons. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com.
This is KJ and Lyons on WEEI.
KJ and Lyons on your Friday here on WEEI. 617-779-7937. Text line 37937 with the July 4th weekend going on. I'm sure people are starting to make their way out of the office. So, and Zach Coe, the producer, jump in as well. Ice cream truck pulls up and it's only got 3 choices to take. Which one are you taking? The Italian ice, the ice cream sandwich, or the sugar cone with the little ice cream already built into it? John. Tell me you're like an anti-ice cream guy.
No,
are you that
huge
guy?
Ice cream guy. I just get like regular.
I just told you there's only 3.
What was the third choice again? Sorry.
The standard sugar cone with the built ice cream already in.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go with that.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Zach, what do you go with?
I think I'm going with the ice cream sandwich.
The ice cream sandwich. You get a little bit of the sticky of the sandwich on your fingertips, and you kind of try and catch it the right way. Now, some brands, when you buy them, it's like not even real ice cream. You're like, oh my God, what is this, ice milk or like frozen breast milk or something? Like, it's something disgusting. There are some things I think you don't go generic on. Ice cream sandwiches are one. I would go with the Italian icy, and because you get the wooden spoon and then you lick the spoon and you get a little bit of the wood taste as well. And like you got like a cherry wood taste on you. And then you could do like Gene Simmons and be like, ah, I'm the adult here, right?
Yeah, sounds it.
Okay, so still to come, we've got your calls and texts at 617-779-7937-37937. It's KJ and Lyons.
And right now, we are joined on the expert hotline by Noah Dalzell. Noah covers the NBA and covers the Celtics for Celtics blog of SB Nation and is all over Twitter at Noah Dalzell NBA. Noah, welcome into the program. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
A pleasure to have you on. I want to start off, Noah, with probably the biggest question of the summer. The Celtics are up for sale. Why do you think they're up for sale, and what do you think is going to happen with this sale?
Well, first of all, I'm bummed that that's the biggest question of the summer, because I feel like we should have a summer of just celebrating the championship and all the extensions. But you're right that this is looming now. I've heard a couple of different rumors. I think Adam Himmelsbach of The Globe is probably the best source for inside information on what could potentially be going on. But I've heard it's just estate planning, and it's just the Grosick family. And the hope internally is that Steve Pagliuca will be able to take over, ownership. And, I'm not sure. I'm not an expert on the finances and who has what. But I certainly know around the organization, the hope is that this won't be a complete transfer to a completely different ownership group, because obviously this one has been great for the Celtics, and coming off of, you know, this championship year and all these extensions, the last thing that anybody wants to see is a complete transfer of ownership. So hopefully Steve Pagliuca can kind of be the main guy moving forward. I'm honestly not sure, like, financially if that's possible, but I know that's been the kind of the common sentiment around people.
Noah, I guess what we're trying to figure out is, how do these guys come up with paying out $500 million in salary in the coming years without either Tatum, which I don't think, or Brown potentially being the odd guy out just because of finances? If you look what's happened in Golden State, if you said 7 years ago they're going to break up the Splash Brothers, you'd say there's no way. Now, injuries and so forth have made it easier to move Clay. But is that the concern, that these guys may not want to carry the heavy if they've got to move off of one of the superstars?
I don't think so, honestly. I haven't heard that being kind of the reason behind this. I also don't think that's why Golden State's dynasty is breaking up. It's because of money, ultimately, because with Klay Thompson took a 3-year, $45 million contract, and Golden State could have paid that, right? So, you know, we're talking about guys that are still very much in their prime and will be at the prime in their prime at the end of their contracts. I think the question is, what happens in 2028, 2029, when all those contracts are expiring? Then we might be talking about something different. But I don't think there's any reason to think that a 29-year-old Jaylen Brown is going to be too expensive for the Celtics to keep if they keep winning. Obviously, right now, it was really easy this summer to extend and re-sign everybody because they just won the championship, right? Now you're 3 years removed for that, and next thing you know, you're the Milwaukee Bucks sending away Jrue Holiday, who helped you win, right? So everything changes really quickly in the NBA, but I think at this point, it's premature to have those conversations or those concerns.
So the biggest story, Noah, of earlier this week we talked about was the Celtics being for sale, but they also had two massive contract agreements on the same day with Derek White and Jason Tatum. I want to start with Jason Tatum. His Supermax came together a lot faster than Jaylen Brown's did last summer. Is there any reason you think that is? Is there anything different about Jason Tatum's Supermax compared to Jaylen Brown's? Is it because of just the Olympics are coming up? Or is just there's something else at play here with Tatum that his was able to get done much faster than Brown's last year?
Well, first of all, I think there was zero doubt about Tatum. It was not a very suspenseful thing. The question this summer, I thought, was whether Derek White was going to get extended. But Jason Tatum was a three-time first-team All-NBA player. Even last summer, he was coming off of two first-team All-NBA seasons. And now you're talking about they just won the championship. So I can't really think of what the doubt would have been to extend him for the full amount. With Jaylen Brown, you're talking about extending him right after the Celtics lost Game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals to Miami. There are a lot of questions about who's coming back. Do we have to keep this team together? Do we blow this team up? Obviously, Jaylen Brown was one of the guys they decided to invest in, and Marcus Smart is the one that got traded. But I think that there were conversations on both sides last summer, and in particular, you know, with the Celtics ownership, I think they always wanted to keep him around. But it's not as straightforward as, I think, you're coming off a championship year and one of your best players is obviously going to be extended. And so I think if this summer we're talking about Jaylen Brown getting extended after a Finals MVP and a championship and everything that he did this year, maybe there's not any, happens a lot faster. Another thing is, I think that there was points last year where, I don't know if Jaylen Brown was always invested in staying in Boston long-term. Obviously, there was the trade rumors, there was the Kevin Durant saga, all that. So there was things for them to work through on both sides. And with Jason Tatum, it's just been a much more simple relationship.
Noah, thanks so much for being here with KJ and Lyons here on your Friday. What's really interesting is that the Celtics have done what usually doesn't happen with championship teams. One or two guys peel off. They get bigger money elsewhere. You end up keeping Hauser. You sign Derek White to the extension. You really have the entire band back. Is there a vet minimum position? I won't say player because it's probably too specific. But is there a position you still feel like the Celtics need to address to continue, for their real run at 19?
No, I don't think so, because they have everybody back they had last year, and that was with Porzingis missing most of the playoffs, right? So I would tell you, I think they have to make sure that they're ready to go if Porzingis is not available, but they've already lived through that with this group, right? And so if anything, I think guys like Xavier Tillman, Nemias Keita, they're only going to get better, and they're only going to become more reliable for the Celtics team. I think Keita was not in the rotation. I think Xavier Tillman came midseason. We already know it's really hard to come midseason and kind of be thrown into the mix. We saw that with Derek White in 2022. So to me, you have all of the pieces. As you said, it's so unique to be able to re-sign and extend everybody and bring everybody back. I mean, the only two guys from last year's team that are not under contract for next year are Svi Mihailuk and O'Shea Brissett, and it's possible that O'Shea takes that last roster spot, right? So I think the front court in general is where I see the biggest weakness on this roster, just because Porzingis is obviously very injury prone. I'm not sure exactly how he's going to look when he comes back from this kind of rare foot injury. And then Al Horford's going to be 39 next June, right? So you have to look at the front court as a potential liability. But hey, I believe in Al Horford's ability to continue contributing at a high level until I see something different. And, you know, again, we saw in this playoff run have a really, really strong playoff run. So I'm going to put the age away and just see what I'm, you know, just go off of what we see. And what we see is a guy who's continuing to play at a high level and stays available all year.
Yeah, Horford was huge, even at that 7-3 game against Indiana for them as well. We're talking with Noah Dalzell of SB Nation Celtics blog. You can find her on Twitter, Noah Dalzell NBA. No, you mentioned the Porzingis injury. You mentioned Xavier Tillman. I'm curious about Luke Kornet, because the first few months of the year with an older Al Horford and Porzingis out, do you feel that Kornet is going to be the guy that gets a lot of those minutes? Is it going to be Tillman? Are they going to mix it up depending on matchup? How do you think they're going to approach those first 3 months of the season without Porzingis and trying to, you know, limit Horford's minutes as well?
Yeah, I think it'll be kind of what we saw at points this year, where it depends on the matchup and it depends on kind of what they're going for at that stretch. So I do think it'll be a little bit of both. Xavier Tillman, 2-year contract for him, I think it's a little bit of an investment in the future. And I'm sure that part of the conversations around him re-signing were around kind of increased opportunities and increased minutes for him, because he really wasn't in the rotation for most of the regular season after being traded. And he was dealing with some knee stuff as well that I think maybe got a little bit under discussed, but that was potentially a factor for why he was more limited. But yeah, I think we'll see both of those guys. And, you know, it really does depend on the matchup. Like, some nights Luke Kornet looks like the ideal backup center, and then other nights he looks more on the unplayable side, or like this matchup, he's a liability, right? So Joe Mazzulla knows him really well. Luke Kornet understands the Celtics system really well. He's the ultimate team guy. He can not play for 3 months and you would never notice based off his body language and what he's contributing on the bench and everything. So I think we're going to see a lot of back and forth. My hope, I think Xavier Tillman's ceiling is pretty high on the Celtics team. So my hope is that we do see him more and that he's able to hit open threes. I watch him warm up before every game. He has a really nice looking shot. I do think that down the road, he can be a reliable knockdown shooter. So I'd love to see him have more of a role next year, but I don't think it's going to be that Luke Kornet kind of fades into the background. He had his best season as a Celtic this last year, and I think we'll see kind of a combination of the two of them. And especially early on, like, they might both get substantial minutes because they're going to want to take it easy on Al Horford, thinking with the long game, and then Porzingis is going to be out for the first 2 months. So I think we might end up seeing a whole lot of both of them.
All right, Noah, before you go, and thank you so much. This is a fascinating 10 minutes. Ice Cream Chuck pulls up and he only has 3 choices: Italian ice cream sandwich, or your standard sugar cone with the built-in ice cream with it. Which one are you taking?
I hate to do this to you, but I'm vegan, so I'm passing.
You think you can take the Italian ice, right? You can take the Italian ice.
Oh, can I? I don't even know what Italian ice is. I'll take Italian ice next.
This is ice and flavored.
Before we let Noah go, I do want to ask a real question, not a vegan ice cream question. No, we have seen a lot of teams in the East upgrade. Paul George goes to the Sixers. Bridges goes to the Knicks. Any of those teams stand out to you that you really think could challenge the Celtics in the East next season and into the playoffs next year?
Yeah, absolutely. I think anybody who's saying that other teams in the Eastern Conference can't challenge the Celtics is maybe has a little bit of recency blinders on. But the 76ers and the Knicks are the two obvious teams, but I also think maybe a second year of Giannis and Dame, they look a little bit better than they looked in year one. So they're on my radar as well. But if you look at that New York Knicks team, like that top six, they're really solid. That's a pretty ideal lineup. And Jalen Brunson, I think, is burgeoning on an MVP type year based off what we saw this postseason. So I have the Knicks at the top of the list as far as, you know, toughest matchups. And I thought they looked really competitive even when they were missing half their team. So I can't even imagine what a healthy Knicks team looks like. But yeah, I think those two teams that you mentioned, and then the Bucks are the other one that are on my radar. And I will say the Pacers, I have to mention them because I feel like everybody forgot about the Pacers, and they were in the Eastern Conference Finals. And I do think that they pose the most difficult matchup for the Celtics throughout this playoff run. So I have to name them as well out of respect.
All right. She is Noah Dalzell, covering the Celtics for SB Nation. You can find her on Twitter at Noah Dalzell NBA. Noah, really appreciate you taking the time. Thanks for joining us, and great stuff.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Have a good one.
You too. See, that's two for Italian ice, John. One for
I couldn't end it on
your
that.
Lazy
I know we were gonna wrap the segment on that.
I always tell you, don't always eat your lunch all at once.
No, once I got the thought of like vegan ice cream in my head, I was like, I have to ask another question. We got to end on something.
But that's her choice. Like no, that's a okay. Because you know what? Think about what happened to what's the guy? Joey Chestnut, right? The whole story yesterday was because he got off of the swine dog, if you will, right? And there she said, I do vegan ice cream. So there's someone who might say, you know what? Today, I'm going to change my ice cream choice and life because of Noah. Sometimes you have to go out on the high note, John.
That's true.
Maybe. But that's two for Italian ice, one for your cone with the ice creams. 37937, you can leave on the text line. Twitch, I see some of them in there as well. But look, if there's a team, and you guys were finishing off about, and she's right about, you can't forget about Indiana because they're doing these sneaky small things and they're not losing big pieces. And again, they were the ones that pretty much pushed the Celtics, even though they got swept.
Well, to her point, though, I mean, who do you think the Celtics actually had a tougher time with, the Pacers or the Mavs? Like, I think they might have had a tougher time. And I know the Mavs won that one game.
Oh, the Pacers for sure.
The Celtics blew the Mavs out twice. Did they?
Well, the
they
Celtics
blew
had
the
to reach
Pacers
in their bag
once.
Twice, right? Yeah. They're down 18 in one game. Derek White hit the corner three. Yeah.
Even game one, Jaylen Brown had to Jaylen force Brown. Overtime.
Right. So that series, by the time it went 4-0, you could have really made an argument that the Celtics should be down 3-1 in that series. So, I don't think we're talking about Indiana because it just doesn't seem like they're the sexy team to talk about. But at the same time, you know, they're going to be a year stronger and a year hungrier. And I think it also invigorated the Knicks in the moves that they have made in terms of saying, you know what, they felt like it should have been them and the Celtics. And I think a lot of other people did as well. But then, of course, when Jalen Brunson got hurt, it just seemed like you could just hear the air just come out of that, you know, that bag there in New York, which is full of a lot of air. So I think the East is going to be a lot more interesting, even though it's really predicated on one major move. I don't think Philly is going to be that team. Maybe they get to the semis. Maybe they're in the 2-3 spot against maybe they're the 3 seed or 2 seed going up against New York. And I would take New York in that series just because they can throw more bodies on the floor. And maybe this would be an interesting 1-4.
Orlando adding Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, too, to that rotation. Like, that's a team that, again, I'm not sitting here saying.
But he's a streaky shooter.
But just defensively, though, like on the Celtics offense. Like, and I'm not telling you Orlando would beat the Celtics in a series, but if that's a first-round matchup, could they push the Celtics to 6 and give them a really hard time to begin the playoffs? Like, it's a good team down there in Orlando. I know nobody pays attention. I know they're young, but that is a good basketball team.
It's interesting you mentioned that because do you get KCP really to kind of frustrate Jaylen Brown because of seeing what Jaylen Brown was able to do and put the onus on Tatum? And if you saw what the Mavericks did, they made it really tougher when Tatum tried to get going. So, I mean, there have been impressive moves in the East, but I don't think any of them usurp the Celtics. And then in the West, you're seeing all this wild stuff going on or still waiting to happen. How about LeBron eating the entire lunch?
How about Denver, though, letting KCP go? Like, and after a year after they let Bruce Brown go? Like,
well, they've got a similar problem like the Celtics do. They've got two of their own coming up on max deals. And how do you build around that, right? They won while the money was still advantageous for them. But the money is not about to be advantageous. And someone like an Aaron Gordon, do you keep him around? Well, the thing is, he's a vet that's going, maybe he gives you a discount deal somewhere in there you hope for. What do you do with Michael Porter Jr.? Does he live up to what his next deal may be? You might say no to that. And then the other part of it is, how do you find the right pieces to play around Jokic when most free agents are usually the superstars themselves? So they're one of those, like, I thought if Klay Thompson had gone to Denver, I've been like, oh my God, like that would be dangerous. Like even more so than him with the Mavericks. If he had gone to Denver, now Denver has a pure outside shooter that can work with Jokic, who's just an absolute machine, dishing out the assists.
Like when I look at the East, I look at Philly and the Knicks as the biggest threats, but I think Indiana and Orlando could give the Celtics problems. But I still look at the teams that concern me the most if I'm a Celtics fan, OKC and Denver. And I'd maybe put Dallas right behind them. But that OKC team.
But now you're talking the finals.
But that OKC team is loaded. Denver, I'm still don't love what they've been doing the last couple of years, but it's still Denver. They're still really good. And think about the finals. How many times did the Celtics leave players not named Luka or Kyrie open for threes and not worry about it? You're not doing that with Klay. So it's just another element there that they have. So You know, I'm not trying to be greedy here and say I'm only worried about the West, but I do think the three best teams after the Celtics to challenge them are all in the West.
So in the East, I would say worry the if it's a least, next, and then the most. Third would be Milwaukee. That would be my number three. Then follow that by Philadelphia. I think the Knicks are the biggest concern. And then when you're out West, I would say OKC, three, Denver, two, and I'm going to surprise you with Minnesota.
Yeah, Minnesota's deserving.
Yeah, if Minnesota turns it around, and you have to see what Karl Anthony Towns is going to do mentally in terms of being all in on what they're doing. They have the pieces that would cause an absolute nightmare for the Celtics because of all that size. And then Naz Reid coming off of the bench. Like, this is how big Naz Reid has become. If Naz Reid ended up staying in Philadelphia, you probably don't have to do a Paul George-level deal, and you can get two other solid players, and then you would say, wow, the Sixers are one of those 2-4 solid teams versus a big three. That's how big of a difference that Naz Reid leaving Philadelphia has been.
Yeah, and I think, like, Minnesota, what, two overtime games against the Celtics this year? They each won one, so that's a team right there. And Noah mentioned Indiana, too. That's a team that I think, again, if they just kind of continue progressing, then maybe they'll be in the neighborhood and they could be even better. And give. But it's just tough for me. Like, I know I feel like that was a tougher series than Dallas, but the Celtics still did sweep. So it's, you know, again, that's the thing about the Celtics going into this year, bringing all these guys back. They have an opportunity to be the best team in the NBA if they're healthy, to be the best team in the East. But I think we have to be cognizant of Philly is better. I think Orlando's going to be better. OKC's going to, like, some of these teams that, like, they're not going to have a path again where, you know, Cleveland in round two, Donovan Mitchell gets hurt, Jared Allen's out, and that's it, right? It is going to be a harder road to get to the finals than a year ago. Even if the Celtics are better than they were a year ago, I still think the road could be a little bit harder.
Yeah, even with the Celtics having their injury on the front end, may be more beneficial than knowing that, not knowing when it's going to show up during the season. 617-779-7937, text line 37937. It's KJ and Lyons in for Gresham Fauria here on WEEI. Good Friday to you.
KJ and Lyons on WEEI.
I've got Lyons. I've got Lyons. Indifferent. KJ and Lyons here in for Gresham Fauria on WEEI. Hopefully you're having a non-productive workday Friday. Completely abusing the financial systems of your corporations. Putting down 8 hours and being there for 8 minutes today, that is the real independence, John.
Yeah, it's not like we're doing that or anything. We are.
Well, some would say that they're like, what are we getting for our money and our ears at this point with these two?
Yeah, they might be.
I think they always are.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, but again, it's one of those, like, you can steal a day today.
Yeah.
You go in, you work a half day, and then you can take
a
full day, not even a half day, and then you have that vacation day in your back pocket, and you can take that day off in mid-October or mid-March when you really don't want to be there.
I feel bad. And tell me if I should feel bad, John. I got a buddy of mine who lives south of here, and he's got a house on the Vineyard. And anytime he comes up, he's like, hey, we're going to be on the Vineyard for this particular week. Why don't you come down? You know, and I'm like thinking, like, you know, I have to go across water to do that. And I'm always like, hey, are you making your way towards Boston or to, like, the main shore? Yeah, Can you come to me? Because they don't understand the process of getting down. So for you, it's a vacation and it's a drive up. You get to your spot. That's cool. For me, it's like, damn, what day of the week do I navigate trying to get down there? And then am I spending a whole day there, or do I have to worry about getting back across before the time is, like, am I wrong to constantly ask them? I've been doing this for 5 years. You guys can be making anywhere near Boston.
I think you could go down there once, like once every, you know, 3 or 4 years, you could go down there.
Yeah.
But yeah, the other years have them up. And I'm with you. Like, look, Martha's Vineyard's cool. Nantucket's cool. But it's like, I've been to them each a couple times. I don't know if I need to go again.
It's an experience.
I'm not a huge, like, Cape guy to begin with. Like, okay. I'd rather just go to Plymouth, which I guess maybe, I mean, it's not over the bridge, so it's not really the Cape. I'd rather just
saying, choose your pick, right?
Yeah, like, I'd rather just go to Plymouth or something like that. Just dealing with the traffic. And
right,
all the,
right.
That's the biggest thing.
To have to deal with traffic and then put your car in a boat and then get, and then try and time when you're coming back.
Like, if I'm going to go down to Nantucket, I want to go down for, like, 4 days or something. Just to make it worth my while to actually go.
But a day visit, because then you don't want to overstay.
Day visit, I'm out. If you invited me, if you, KJ Carson, said, do you want to come down for a day visit to Nantucket, I'd say, unless you're getting me in Bill Belichick's house, no way. All right, that's it.
No, I mean, you'd be offended, would you not? You're like, okay, they're pretty
I'd
much
be like, you should know better than this.
I start looking at my watch when you're in my house and be like, you know the last time, you know the last boat leaves that.
Get out of here, dude.
Well, that's the biggest issue with having to do the day visit. You spend your entire day on Nantucket or the Vineyard, and then you're like, oh, well, now I have to troop it all the way back home.
I have to ride a boat and then drive an hour and a half after I ride the boat.
Right, and then sit in a bunch of traffic from a bunch of people who've just done the same or who have done other activities. It's it's funny. When I lived in D.C., I said the reason why D.C. traffic is so bad is because they're not going to tear down George Washington's home to build a bypass. Now, here, they would consider it. But there's you can't go further out into the water. Maybe this may be one of those places where you say, do you build one of the, I don't know if you've ever been down to the Virginia Beach area. Will you build like one of those 35-mile-long bridges?
Or isn't it, don't the Florida Keys have something like that?
Yeah.
There's like a really long bridge linking them?
Yeah, I guess the only problem would be is like, well, damn, if it took them that long just to build a park above 93 in the expressway, how long do you think it's going to be to put a bridge in the water?
And what's that bridge that, isn't there like a, not a bridge, a tunnel that goes from like London to France?
Yeah.
Under the English Channel or something?
Yeah,
it
under
might
the
be
English
a train.
Channel. I wouldn't trust putting something underwater that went from, say, like, you know, from like
I would not ride that either.
You know, like John Adams put it together.
But at least it might alleviate my traffic deal and my ferry.
It's gotta because there's no other way around it. I think
and
that's
like the Sagamore Bridge, you ride over it and it says like built in 1933 and finished in 1935. So it was built with the New Deal. Built with the New Deal. Maybe we're gonna widen that road a little bit. And the construction they've done after the Sagamore Bridge and around there. And that is great. And I think they've done some after the Bourne Bridge too, which has been really good. But the bridges themselves, it's like it gets narrow right before you get on. It's narrow. So it slows everything. Cars back then were what, like 3 feet long?
Well, then
I mean,
again,
the new
how
deal.
Sturdy would that bridge if it starts off as a five-laner at the very beginning of it? That's a very thin structure there. You got to start small and get bigger. But yeah, I guess if there was one wish I would have is, Can you build a bridge, you know, from the foot back to the, you know, just to give someone, so at least you can have a loop on the other side. It's bad. 37937, Zach, what do you have on the text line?
All right, so you guys were talking about the potential sale of the Celtics coming with the building of a new arena. One texter wants to know, who's paying for this arena?
You want to hear it slowly?
Yeah.
Your taxes will pay.
But we've seen, it's interesting, there's been some cities over the last handful of years that have kind of rebelled against that. Remember St. Louis didn't want to build a new stadium for the Rams and they ended up leaving? Like, there have been some cities. San Diego didn't want to build a new one for the Chargers. Like,
we're not talking about winning franchises here, by the way.
No, we're not. And it's not like they're storied franchises that were there forever. But there have been some cities starting to rebel. I think consumers are getting smarter where, hey, these billionaires can afford more than they're letting on to. And on top of it, the city doesn't really make back that amount of revenue, or at least it takes decades if you really pour in billions of tax dollars into a new arena. It's the same thing we see. All the cities that host the Olympics, they all lose money. There's only been one city in the last 100 years to make a profit.
Brazil almost lost the whole country, right?
Right. There's only been one city, I think, in the last 100 years to make a profit on the Olympics, and that was Atlanta in 1996. And
part of that is we know would make it do what it do, baby, when the lights go dark.
But that's also
Magic City.
lemon pepper wings all flats. But they also, like, they had some infrastructure in place down in Atlanta, whereas a lot of these other cities, like Beijing, remember all that stuff they built for the 2008 Olympics? Just never used it again? Like, that's, so I think that's something, too.
That could be on purpose.
Consumers are getting smarter about that stuff. So if I'm a team wanting to build a new arena, I don't think I can go to the well and just say, oh, I want all public funding again. I think, look, there's still going to be public funding.
Some.
But I'd be careful about trying to get too much of it because I think those days are kind of numbered.
Well, let's say you pair it up with the casino, then probably casinos could put a sizable money up there.
Yeah.
Right. And I think, you know, I think the number is about 100 million, call about 125 million per 10,000 seats. So if you're looking at maybe a 25,000 seat arena, maybe you're looking at a $500 million total cost, you know, with
because what do they have, 18,000, a little over 18,000,
you know,
seats
plus,
now.
You know, so. I'm the shop steward here, and you know, I can't afford, I should be able to afford to live here and build the place. So it's gonna, you're gonna pay a little more in cost in terms of, you know, who's building it, the workers who are building it, the time frame, which is constantly going to be the story. So that's kind of a bit of a gamble if you want to build something new. How soon is now when it turns to getting it done, right? So yeah, everything.
Oh, you know what it was?
Be,
sorry
be
to cut you.
Yeah.
I just found it. No, the Royals and the Chiefs tried to get new stadiums, and the people in Kansas City voted no because it was too much public funding. So right. That's a Chiefs team that's a dynasty right now. The Royals, I know,
but that also comes with population size, right? If you've only got about 1.4 million in the greater Kansas City area, how do I know that? I used to work there. Versus 4.2 million greater population for Boston, it'd be easy to spread that money across the state, and especially around greater Boston. I guess the crying would be is, well, why can't they just do it at TD? And the answer goes back to, well, maybe they're not getting the best of the deal from the Bruins. And like we talked about this yesterday, like if the Bruins have first right of refusal, if there's a Tuesday night Bruins game and a Wednesday night Celtics game, well, that Wednesday night Celtics game may be getting some condensation by putting that court on right underneath the ice
or
as quick as possible.
They just get the better dates too. Like if the Bruins want to play every Thursday in December, they get to play every Thursday in December and the Celtics have to work around that.
All right, we're going to talk Patriots, and I don't think this team is as bad as people are professing that it will be, and we'll tell you why next. It's KJ Lyons in for Gresham Fourier, the third hour next, 617-779-7937, text line 37937. Thanks so much for hanging out.
KJ and Lyons on WEEI.
I've got Lyons. I've got Lyons. Indifferent. KJ Lyons here in for Gresham Fourier on WEEI. Hopefully you're having a non-productive workday Friday. Completely abusing the financial systems of your corporations. Putting down 8 hours and being there for 8 minutes today. That is the real independence, John.
Yeah, it's not like we're doing that or anything. We are.
Well, some would say that they're like, what are we getting for our money and our ears at this point with these two?
Yeah, they might be.
I think they always are.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, but again, it's one of those, like, you can steal a day today.
Yeah.
You go in, you work a half day, and then you can take
a
full day, not even a half day, and then you have that vacation day in your back pocket, and you can take that day off in mid-October or mid-March when you really don't want to be there.
I feel bad, and tell me if I should feel bad, John. I got a buddy of mine who lives south of here, and he's got a house on the Vineyard, and anytime he comes up, he's like, hey, we're going to be on the Vineyard for this particular week. Why don't you come down, you know, and I'm like thinking like, you know, I have to go across water to do that. And I'm always like, hey, are you making your way towards Boston or to like the main shore? Yeah,
do you do come this? To me?
Can you come to me? Because they don't understand the process of getting down. So for you, it's a vacation and it's a drive up. You get to your spot. That's cool. For me, it's like, damn. What day of the week do I navigate trying to get down there? And then am I spending a whole day there or do I have to worry about getting back across before the time is like, am I wrong to constantly ask them? I've been doing this for 5 years. You guys can be making anywhere near Boston.
I think you could go down there once, like once every, you know, 3 or 4 years you could go down there.
Yeah.
But yeah, the other years have them up. And I'm with you, like, look, Martha's Vineyard's cool. Nantucket's cool. But it's like, I've been to them each a couple times. I don't know if I need to go again.
I'm
not a huge like Cape guy to begin with. Like I'd rather just go to Plymouth, which I guess maybe, I mean, it's not over the bridge, so it's not really the Cape.
Choose your pick, right?
Yeah, like I'd rather just go to Plymouth or something like that. Just dealing with the traffic. And
right,
that's the biggest thing.
To have to deal with traffic and then put your car in a boat and then get, then try and time when you're coming back.
Like if I'm going to go down to Nantucket, I want to go down for like 4 days or something just to make it worth my while to actually go.
But a day visit, because then you don't want to overstay.
I'm out. If you invited me, if you, KJ Carson, said, do you want to come down for a day visit to Nantucket, I'd say, unless you're getting me in Bill Belichick's house, no way. All right, that's it.
No, you'd be offended, would you not? You're like, okay, they're pretty
much saying, you should know better than this.
I start looking at my watch when you're in my house and be like, well, you know the last boat leaves at.
Get out of here, dude. Westford.
Well, that's the biggest issue with having to do the day visit. You spend your entire day on Nantucket or the Vineyard, and then you're like, oh, well, now I have to troop it all the way back home.
I have to ride a boat and then drive an hour and a half after I ride the boat.
Right. Exactly. And then sit in a bunch of traffic from a bunch of people who've just done the same or who have done other activities. It's. Yeah. It's funny, when I lived in D.C., I said the reason why D.C. traffic is so bad is because they're not going to tear down George Washington's home to build a bypass. Now, here, they would consider it. But you can't go further out into the water. Maybe this may be one of those places where you say, do you build one of the, I don't know if you've ever been down to the Virginia Beach area, will you build like one of those 35-mile-long bridges?
Or isn't it, don't the Florida Keys have something like that?
Yeah.
There's like a really long bridge linking them?
Yeah, I guess the only problem would be is like, well, damn, if it took them that long just to build a park above 93 in the expressway, how long do you think it's going to be to put a bridge in the water?
And what's that bridge that, isn't there like a, not a bridge, a tunnel that goes from like London to France?
Yeah.
Under the English Channel or something?
Yeah,
it
under
might
the
be
English
a train.
Channel. I wouldn't trust putting something underwater that went from, say, like, you know, from like,
I would not ride that either.
You know, like John Adams put it together.
But at least
and
it might alleviate my traffic deal and my ferry.
It's gotta, because there's no other way around it. I think
and
that's
like the Sagamore Bridge, you ride over it and it says like built in 1933 and finished in 1935. So it was built with the New Deal. Built with the New Deal. Maybe we're going to widen that road a little bit. And the construction they've done after the Sagamore Bridge and around there, and that is great. And I think they've done some after the Bourne Bridge too, which has been really good. But the bridges themselves, it's like it gets narrow right before you get on. It's narrow, so it slows everything. Cars back then were what, like 3 feet long?
Well, then
here's the New Deal.
How sturdy would that bridge if it starts off as a five laner at the very beginning of it? That's a very thin structure there. You got to start small and get bigger. But yeah, I guess if there was one wish I would have is, Can you build a bridge, you know, from the foot back to the, you know, just to give someone, so at least you can have a loop on the other side. It's bad. 37937, Zach, what do you have on the text line?
All right, so you guys were talking about the potential sale of the Celtics coming with the building of a new arena. One texter wants to know, who's paying for this arena?
You want to hear it slowly?
Yeah.
Your taxes will pay.
But we've seen, it's interesting, there's been some cities over the last handful of years that have kind of rebelled against that. Remember St. Louis didn't want to build a new stadium for the Rams and they ended up leaving? Like, there have been some cities. San Diego didn't want to build a new one for the Chargers. Like,
we're not talking about winning franchises here, by the way.
No, we're not. And it's not like they're storied franchises that were there forever. But there have been some cities starting about. I think consumers are getting smarter where, hey, these billionaires can afford more than they're letting on to. And on top of it, the city doesn't really make back that amount of revenue, or at least it takes decades if you really pour in billions of tax dollars into a new arena. It's the same thing we see. All the cities that host the Olympics, they all lose money. There's only been one city in the last 100 years to make a profit.
Brazil almost lost the whole country.
Right. There's only been one city, I think, in the last 100 years to make a profit on the Olympics, and that was Atlanta in 1996. And part
that's
of that
we know would make it do what it do, baby, when the lights go dark.
But that's also
Magic City.
lemon pepper wings all flats. But they also, they had some infrastructure in place down in Atlanta, whereas a lot of these other cities, like Beijing, remember all that stuff they built for the 2008 Olympics? Just never used it again? Like, that's, so I think that's something, too. Consumers
that
are getting
that could be on purpose.
Consumers are getting smarter about that stuff. So if I'm a team wanting to build a new arena, I don't think I can go to the well and just say, "Oh, I want all public funding again." I think, look, there's still going to be public funding, but I'd be careful about trying to get too much of it because I think those days are kind of numbered.
Well, let's say you pair it up with the casino, then probably casinos could put a sizable money up there.
Yeah,
right. And I think I think the number is about 100 million, call about 125 million per 10,000 seats. So if you're looking at maybe a 25,000 seat arena, maybe you're looking at a 500 million total cost, you know, with
because what do they have? 18,000, a little over 18,000,
you know,
seats
plus,
now.
You know, I'm the shop steward here, and I can't afford, I should be able to afford to live here and build the place. So you're going to pay a little more in cost in terms of, you know, who's building it, the workers who are building it, the time frame, which is constantly going to be the story. So that's kind of a bit of a gamble if you want to build something new. How soon is now when it turns to getting it done, right? So everything's
going to be bigger. Oh, you know what it was? Sorry to cut you. I just found it.
No,
the Royals and the Chiefs tried to get new stadiums, and the people in Kansas City voted no. because there was too much public funding. So right. That's a Chiefs team that's a dynasty right now. The Royals, I know,
but that also comes with population size, right? If you've only got about 1.4 million in the greater Kansas City area, how do I know that? I used to work there. Versus 4.2 million greater population for Boston, it'd be easy to spread that money across the state, and especially around greater Boston. I guess the crying would be is, well, why can't they just do it at TD? And the answer goes back to, well, maybe they're not getting the best of the deal from the Bruins. And like we talked about this yesterday, like if the Bruins have first right of refusal, if there's a Tuesday night Bruins game and a Wednesday night Celtics game, well, that Wednesday night Celtics game may be getting some condensation by putting that court on right underneath the ice
or
as quick as possible.
They just get the better dates too. Like if the Bruins want to play every Thursday in December, they get to play every Thursday in December and the Celtics have to work around that.
All right, we're going to talk Patriots, and I don't think this team is as bad as people are professing that it will be, and we'll tell you why next. It's KJ Lyons in for Gresham Fourier, the third hour next, 617-779-7937, text line 37937. Thanks so much for hanging out.